This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonslow, and what it is, what it shall be, what it was. Today, I'm going to try to talk about, I think, barometers, but not the ones that we use to measure atmospheric pressure. So before I get started, let's get a word from our sponsor, Knapp Autotech Training. Let Knapp Autotech's Build-A-Tech program, you know, like Build-A-Bear, help you turn your general technician into a moneymaker for your shop. Make them a profitable member of your team. Go to knappautotech.com for more details. A link to an article. I guess I get them periodically, at least once a year, maybe a few times a year, about the top 10 of something. In this case, it was the top 10 zero-turn lawnmowers, which, along with a few of my friends, tend to like and talk about and talk smack about the brands we don't have. And I've gotten them in the past too about the top 10 chainsaws and, you know, whatever. There's however many different things, blowers, backpack blowers, and more than just forestry and garden equipment or lawn equipment. That stuff pops up. Top 10 metal songs, top 10 podcast microphones, the list goes on. But I was kind of reading through the list, of course. I'm sure if you've ever seen these, depending on your situation, you know, what your yard is, not just how big it is, but also obstacles and then just the topography of your yard. Most of these on the list are going to work just fine. And also, I guess, considering expectations. Are you just trying to get the grass cut, or are you looking for something more? But when I read these things, they'll do like pros and cons and one of the mowers. And I don't think it matters what the brand is or where you buy it or anything like that. But one of the cons to the mower was the price, that they were deeming it costly. The price was like $4,500. Now, if you're sitting on 2/10 or 1/4 acre that's pretty flat with a couple of trees, $4,000, $4,500 is probably on the pricey side, especially when you've been probably mowing most of the time with a lawn tractor and a push mower that together maybe struggled to break 2,000. And that's not a dig. It's just what it is, right? However, I find there's no barometer. They don't compare these things with what's out there, like what's considered a high-end machine. You know what I mean? I guess maybe if we even think about televisions, a lot of times when they're rattling off the top 10 televisions, usually the top one is arguably the best, or there might be a link to the one that very few of us can afford. It explains why at one time there's probably 8K TVs available. Now 4K is kind of the norm, but you could get an 8K TV and it's going to be quite a bit more expensive. And it will explain that and then explain why it didn't put the 8Ks on the list. I think the same kind of goes for this mower review in that it's not playing to the extremes. It's playing to the vast majority that the mower will probably get used for an hour, maybe two tops per week. And in a lot of places, not even year round. And I get that. However, I'd still find it would be interesting to people to see that this $4,500 mower that has, you know, whatever, a 50-inch deck, 52-inch deck, 25 horsepower, if they were to go looking and end up at a vendor for a commercial line of mowers like Skag, Hustler, Exmark, Toro, Walker, Cub Cadet has a commercial line. A lot of these actually have commercial lines, Husqvarna. Some of them could be all built by one company and rebadged, kind of shared around. I think Bobcat has a line, Bad Boy. I'm just rattling these off as I think of them. But I think I got most of the heavy hitters. Some of those have 50, 52-inch deck and maybe 23 horse or 21 horse. And yet that mower is $15,000, what does it do so different? And if you were to mow your yard with one versus the other, the one, you're going to see a difference. It's not even going to be close. And yeah, the brass tacks of it is blade speed. And, you know, if we went to chainsaws, most homeowners will never need a commercial level professional saw. But why does that, we'll just pick on, I don't know, steel or steel, depending on where you live. Most people come in and they want something with a 16-inch bar, 20-inch bar. So why does that steel with the higher number, and I don't know, I'll just make up numbers. Maybe there's a little on the older side, but whatever. It's for just the sake of discussion. Why does that MS-391 have more horsepower, have more cubic inches, if you will, or cc's, priced about $100 less than the MS-362, which had a little bit less horsepower, weighed maybe a little bit less, but probably costs $200-$300 more? It doesn't make sense. They go for that 391 in a heartbeat. They're getting more power and maybe weighs a little bit more, but it comes with a longer bar, just, you know, right out of the gate. You don't have to pay a little extra for a larger, longer bar. And yet then they get out in the woods with their buddy who either did a little bit of studying or knew somebody that cuts wood for a living or quite a bit of firewood, knew about professional level saws versus consumer levels, and bought the 362. And even though it has technically less horsepower, it was outcutting the 391 something fierce, being a little bit lighter, revving higher, all that. Just what the heck's the deal? And I think both in the mowers and the chainsaws, it's, we got torque curves going on. You know, where's peak torque versus, you know, governed RPM versus blade tip speed? Or in the chainsaws, it's going to be chain speed. It's going to be much different when that 391 hits the wood and you got the bar buried in like a hardwood. It's pulling that torque curve. You know, it's, the peak torque isn't near peak RPM. Peak RPM is just maybe 11,000 RPMs. Peak torque is at 8,500. So it bogs way down to that peak torque, and then it pulls the chain through. Where the 362 peak RPM might be 11,000, 12,000 RPMs, peak torque's at 10,9, 10,5. That's a big difference. And it's the same with the commercial mowers, right? The horsepower number can be lower, but its peak torque is much closer to that governed speed, you know, peak RPM, if you will, maintaining blade tip speed even when it's working. And the blade tip speed is so much higher anyways that even when the engine does bog down, it's still cutting better and it's still getting more lift on the grass blades, holding them up straighter to be cut more evenly. And, you know, that contributes at least a little bit to striping. Some mowers have rollers on them that lay the grass over to give it some striping. And then a lot of them just rely on the deck, the way the deck's designed and that lift. NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in the town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. Auto Tech's entry-level Build-A-Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. Auto Tech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the Auto Tech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. Autotech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC to DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Autotech Training. So yay, automotive podcast talking about mowers and chainsaws and reviews. But the thing is it's that barometer thing. And it makes me think about repair shops and what we're doing and what we're capable of doing and the clients not really knowing. They don't have a barometer. The barometer is, I brought my car in for a brake squeal. You told me it was going to be $500. I said, okay, came and picked it up, drove away and the brake squeal is gone and I'm ecstatic. Or maybe not even ecstatic. Maybe just that's the way it's supposed to be. So content. But then a friend of mine with the same car went to a different shop and the brake was squealing. They were told it's $800 and they got it done and the brake squeal's gone. But their buddy's telling them, like, I only paid $500 at so-and-so. I think you got taken. And they're not necessarily comparing invoices and all that, but maybe they are. But they don't have a barometer, right? Why the oil change at the Quick Lube, and it's not knocking Quick Lubes. There's plenty of them out there that do fine work. They take their jobs very seriously. But what's the difference between that and going to Shop B? Why is Shop B wants more money for the oil change? What makes it so special? And I don't know that we give the barometer. What's the barometer? What's separating us from them without running them into the ground? Because them serves a perfectly respectable clientele or segment. They're targeting and servicing a demographic that needs to be targeted and addressed. But there are people that are looking for more. They're looking for the best value. And they understand that the dollar amount isn't necessarily the best indicator of that. And there's going to be some people, there's going to be people that do want more, but they can't yet. And there's going to be others that absolutely can afford it, but are just going to look at it and go, but I don't need it. I'm sitting on a quarter acre that's pretty flat. Do I need a $16,000 skeg? And Brian Pollock and I will agree, yes, you do. But we're probably in the minority. So they can very well afford it, but they don't think that they need it. I think the issue is we have to get the word out. We have to start thinking about our marketing to the public to demonstrate the value, the difference. You know, we don't need to toss our prices out there, right? If you go on YouTube or wherever and start binging through videos or marketing commercials, if you will, for whatever, you know, in this case, chainsaws and trimmers and mowers and such, they're not talking about the price unless that's what they're trying to sell on, which will not be the commercial lines. Off the cuff, I can't think of seeing many where it's, you know, you can have this Walker T27i for only $18,999. But they are going to talk about the advantages of having the deck out in front of you, the grass collection system being integrated in the chassis of the mower, and whichever engine is in it, air-cooled, liquid-cooled, diesel. And they're going to talk about the deck design itself and how it promotes lifting the blades, grass blades, that the collection deck isn't relying just on the blades spinning under the deck, but also it's basically got its own supercharger that pulls grass clippings and whatnot from the deck and blows it into the collection bin through a spout that rotates or at least moves side to side to evenly spread those grass clippings in that bin. And then when it gets full, there's an alarm so that you know to stop and go to dump it. And then if you buy whatever model, it's got the grass dump, automatic grass dump or electric grass dump that lifts it up and over the side of a pickup truck to be dumped. That's what they're going to talk about. Do our commercials do that? Does our marketing strategy do any of that? Are we pointing out how we do things, why we do them? And if our clients get to see that? So, you know, I've said this before, Maybe I need more material. I don't know. But we live in the Rust Belt. When we do brakes, we take the caliper brackets to our bead blaster and clean up the surfaces that are going to have movement. Something, the pad, where the pads go, where the pad clips go, where the hardware goes. We get that all cleaned up nice and smooth and explain why we do that, why that's important, especially in Minnesota, where we put tons of salt on the roads in the winter, kind of putting seeds, I think, into clients that see that. And then maybe they go to their mechanic or their shop or their mechanical specialist. And it's like, oh, okay, it needs brakes. Just wondering, do you bead blast the caliper brackets? No, we take a wire brush to them. And maybe in our video, we mention how wire brush doesn't do quite as good a job. That kind of sits in their head, right? And now they're seeing a little bit more value. And maybe when they did call for an estimate and we were, or you were, or whoever it was that does this, media blasting, bead blasting, going, we're a few bucks more. They're going, gosh, darn it. Maybe it would have been worth it. And I don't think it just stops there. I think you can just keep going and going with this. You know, maybe when we're doing AC services, we don't use the all-in-one machine. Or if we do, we supplement it with a different vacuum pump because we're aiming to pull the vacuum lower yet. Why? I can explain why. If they go somewhere else and they just think to ask, like, hey, you do everything with that machine? Is that, I heard somewhere that maybe they don't pull as deep a vacuum as you would like. Maybe leaves moisture in the system or whatnot. Most mechanics would probably respond with, like, we've been doing this for decades. We've never had a problem. And yet I think it can be demonstrated that the higher volume, stronger, if you will, pumps do a better job and can demonstrate better performing systems. Same with, you know, programming or scan tools. You know, why we use this, why we use that, why we do the programming in-house, why we upgraded our alignment machine. I think little things, it's starting to set the barometer. I think if you can use social media influence, maybe radio, depending on your demographic, right? You got to figure out roughly how many people listen. So my shop I work at, manage, we do some radio stuff because a lot of the businesses in town, that's all they play is the local radio station. So in a way, we have a kind of a trapped market, if you will, that are going to hear us. You know the deal, if you're online, especially video, you're on the radio, you are kind of automatically the expert because we know there's a whole bunch of people out there that are doing this stuff that aren't experts, right, Scotty? Lots and lots of views, lots and lots of followers, lots and lots of BS. But who's the expert? The real experts, we just don't see on that stuff, right? There's a lot of these videos online now with real mechanics. I don't know that I know any of them. I think I saw one at a trade show, which I was impressed, a training conference she attended. So kudos. But when you start thinking about heavy hitters when it comes to auto repair, I don't know that I ever really see them on these things, which is a little bit of a tangent. Sorry about that. But really, in your marketing, using that effect to your advantage to set that barometer, I think that's important for people to kind of know maybe what to strive for. And if they can afford it or they do see value in it, they're going to start coming your way. And especially if you're working your way to being that shop that now, not only are they hearing you on the radio and not only are they seeing you in their Facebook reels or Instagrams or YouTube shorts, stuff like that, that they're also hearing about you from other repair shops. We've kind of hit where, as far as we can go with this, we recommend taking it to shop B, which if I say this long enough, there's actually going to be shops opening up calling themselves shop B. And I guess that's, if you will, the source of the inspiration for this, if you call it that, is these articles that you see, you know, these ratings, top 10 vacuum cleaners. Number, it seems like it just every other year, right? Dyson, Shark. And yet, and I'm sure they're out there, but I've never seen a commercial cleaning company using a Shark or a Dyson. It's usually some other name, or if it is like a Hoover, it's a Hoover commercial series, and it doesn't look like any homeowner vacuum. And not that it would be fit for that, because usually they're not multitaskers, if you will, right? The vacuums are meant to vacuum carpet, and that's what they do, and they do it well. And they're not chock full of different attachments to vacuum your blinds and your furniture and your pets. But that's the barometer. When you start seeing the consumer models tested versus the commercial brands, the professional brands, they're usually not even in it. And then, of course, the serviceability, right? That should not be forgotten. Most commercial brand, or sorry, commercial lines of anything are generally meant to last longer or under more punishment, right? A commercial mower is meant to be used, you know, what, 8 to 12 hours a day, 5-6 days a week, and last a few years and be serviceable in the field, parts available, stuff like that. Same with chainsaws. The professional saw is more capable, weekend cutting, but people that need to cut up a few limbs after a windstorm, or they go weekend cutting, maybe don't need a professional level saw until they use one. And then they'll be like, I'm never going back. That's kind of the hope with our shops. If we can demonstrate that value, that once they come to us, they're never going back. So that's how I will leave you. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for the messages, continued inquiries about my dad and wife. My dad is, I think I've said it before, I just don't have a better description, or it's a freaking miracle. I don't know. I'm not implying he's back to where he was at, you know, quote unquote normal, but you know, we're sitting at what, 4 or 5 months. He's been driving, talking to him. It just seems like dad. So it's amazing. Freaking amazing. It's mind blowing. The tumblers in that lock that had to work, it just blows my mind. Yeah, I would say Danielle, not much of an update short of rigorous activity. Things are normal. Also, thank you so much for the messages with podcast ideas or responses to past episodes. I really enjoy reading them. And I think getting to the point where I can probably do another episode just answering, kind of a mailbag type, getting very close to that. And yeah, so thank you again. Thank you to Napa Auto Tech Training for sponsoring. Thank you to the Aftermarket Radio Network and even Tracy. Yeah, I mean, I just said that and I think I can see the top of her head swelling up. So yeah, until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Matt Fonslow, diagnosing the aftermarket A to Z on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Matt on your favorite listening app. He's very interested in what you have to say. Let him know what you'd like him to cover and come on the show. Matt is all for advancing the aftermarket. Find Matt Fonslow on social media and connect, or on aftermarketradionetwork.com.